guess we could call this Felix before, excuse me, Paul before Felix, the king. I'm going to do a little repetition. I guess that'll be all right. Acts chapter 24. 24, the book of Acts. And we look at these first 9 verses again. And after 5 days, Ananias, the high priest, ascended, and Jesus came down with the elders and with a certain orator named Jacobus, who informed the governor against Paul, that is, he brought his charges against the apostles. And when he was called, it is when Paul was called forth, Paul was called. When Paul was called before Felix, the governor, he was holding court on that particular day. This is when the charges were leveled against him. I read on. It says, seeing that by thee, he's talking, Tertullus is trying to flatter the governor now, the judge. He says, seeing that by thee we enjoy great quietness, and that very worthy deeds are done unto this nation by thy providence, we accept in always and in all places most noble Felix with all thankfulness. Notwithstanding that I be not further tedious, I don't want to tire you out. Get this thing right to the point here, and we'll try to get on with it, and you make your judgment, and we'll be gone. That's kind of what he's saying here. They want a quick judgment, he and these Jews. Yet notwithstanding that I be not further tedious unto thee, I pray thee that thou wouldest to hear us of thy clemency a few words. For we have found this man a pestilent fellow. That is, he's a pest. That's all he's been doing, going across the country pestering people. And a mover of sedition. Oh, that really stirs up the Romans. They don't like that idea of sedition. And this clever, slick lawyer by the name of Tertullus, he knows that. He knows what he's doing here. Among all the Jews throughout the world, and a ringleader of the sect of the Nazarenes. The sect of the Nazarenes. Jesus was called the Nazarene from Nazareth. And so here he's nothing. Here now they've diminished this idea of the Lord's kingdom and his church and his movement to a sect. Who also hath gone about to profane the temple. That's another charge. So you got 3 charges trumped up against him. Pestering the Jews all across the world. And a mover of sedition against Rome. And then profaning the holy place, the temple in Jerusalem. All of these trumped up charges, nothing but false. Every one of them. And you can reminisce a little bit and look back and reflect. It somewhat, by pattern, takes you back to the time of our Lord Jesus Christ when he was brought before the Sanhedrin. And he was charged with false charges. You remember it said distinctively when they could find no one who had a legal charge, a charge of any truth, they sought false witnesses. That's all they could trump up was false witnesses against the Lord. That's all they can do here is trump up false charges against this gospel preacher. But they can do that. Satan, of course, he's the ringleader of this whole outfit. And he knows what he's doing. What he's trying to do is just stop this gospel movement, damp it out right now before it goes any further. And let's get back to the business of perverted religion, which was Judaism. And, of course, paganism. So, trying to give you an idea of what's going on here. I probably went over this last week, but I'm just, had a little difficulty struggling with my congestion problem, and I didn't like what I did, so I won't try to do this again. He goes on and says, whom we took and would have judged according to our law. But the chief captain, Lysias, he interfered. He got in their way. You remember, Paul was being torn to pieces by these thugs. That's all they were, just like three street thugs. And a crowd of them, descended upon Paul in the temple court there and would have torn him absolutely to pieces had not Lysias, who was captain in charge of the temple guard. And he sent his men down and said, told them, go down and take that man away from me before they kill him. And let's see what's going on. He didn't know what was going on at that time. He didn't know who was at fault. Where Paul was at fault, or the Jews were at fault. But he wanted justice done. The only way he could do that was take Paul from the hands of these murderous Jews. And so that's what he's referring back to. But the chief captain, Lysias, came upon us. And with great violence. No, the violence was being done by them. They were trying to restore order. The soldiers were. With great violence, took him away out of our hands, commanding his accusers to come unto thee. By examining of whom thyself mayest take knowledge of all these things, whereof we accuse him. And the Jews also assented. That is, they gave an agreement for this. Everything that this prosecuting attorney is charging Paul with, and the story that he's relayed to them, he says, he's right. They shake their head. Yeah, he's right. So they assented, saying that these things were so. And they were absolutely false. Absolutely false. So here we have Paul before Felix, and we'll term this again a profane forensic depravity. I'm talking about the legal aspect of a distorted, perverted legal system. What we see here is absolute depravity. Trying to take the law and to pervert that law and distort that law to achieve its own ends, their own ends. It still goes on, don't it? It still goes on every day. It still goes on. You know, they're trying to flatter him here. We enjoy much peace, Tertullus, with his flattering tongue. Speaks to Felix, the governor. And, of course, there's a real groan of flattery in this address of this hired orator. He's hired. He's paid. It's like you go and select your lawyer. You've got a case you need some help on. You've got to go to court. You don't go by yourself. You don't represent yourself. You've got to get a... And if it's something very... It might be detrimental. Something that might really be critical, you want to find the slickest lawyer you possibly can. Whether you're right or whether you're wrong. And if you know you're wrong, you definitely want a slick lawyer. That's the way it works, isn't it? That's the way it works. So these flattering words is addressed to this corrupt, malicious, self-appointed judge, this governor. He's the judge. He's the governor, and he's the judge. And somewhat the jury. He's one and all. Does it say anywhere here that we have a representative for Paul? He's in court. Has he been appointed a, a rep, somebody represent him? No, sir, not at all. He has one now. He has one representing him. That's the Lord Jesus Christ. And he's going to win this case here. Christ's going to win this case here. He's controlling everything about this, every small detail in this matter. Paul, Christ is controlling this thing, and Paul is going to be totally vindicated and free to go on to Rome. That's where God said, "I'm going to send you." After you've testified me here in Jerusalem, you're going to Rome, testify me there. And so he told Paul earlier, you know, be of good cheer, Paul. Be of good cheer, I'm with you. So these words, I say, were addressed by a professional flatterer to one of the worst of Roman governors, they say, ever. One of the worst in the entire Roman Empire is old Felix. Matter of fact, that some of the historians have got some stuff on Felix that would curl your hair. Some things, the atrocities that he was guilty of. And this is who Paul is before. So both speaker and the listener knew that he was lying. That Tertullus was lying. Not a thing he said was true. And he knew it, and Felix knew it. Both knew that the words described what a governor ought to be. They did. I mean, he ought to be these things. He ought to be noble. He ought to be just. He ought to be fair. He ought to be a man who's in authority to establish and maintain the peace. They say all these things about him. But all these things are lies. And Felix knows it, and Tertullus knows it, and the Jews that came up with Tertullus know it. And best of all, God knows it. Best of all, God knows it. So what we have here, they suggest for us two or three things. Let's think about these for a little while. Now, I won't keep you long. You know, he says, he makes a statement here, Tertullus does, when he's flattering the old governor. He said, verse number 2, look at it there. He says, "And when he was called for, they Paul's called for, Tertullus began to accuse him, saying, seeing that by thee, that is by your hand, Felix, we enjoyed great quietness, and that very worthy deeds are done unto this nation by thy providence. We accept it always and in all places, most noble Felix, with all thankfulness." Well, that's good. That's good. We ought to be thankful for representatives who do and enact certain laws to keep peace. I mean, that's a blessing for us, isn't it? Especially we who try to witness the gospel out here. Paul said, if it's possible, live at peace with all men. For the sake of the gospel, that we might be able to convey the gospel into the world around us. In a little while, I'm going to read you a letter from one of the missionaries that we support, that we don't, not financially so. We did at one time, but we support his comrade, Brother Paul Snyder, but my brother Trevor Johnson. I got an email here. I'll read it to you. How God's blessed in Papua and Indonesia, and how God in a political way has blessed. And it's been through prayer. And God shows he's still working just like he did in the days of Paul, and he's still moving important men, potentates, men of great authority. I'll read it to you in a little while when we have prayer, and we want you to pray for this situation over there. But coming back here again, they suggest to us that, you know, we ought to be thankful. We ought to be thankful. But as we're thankful for the peace that we enjoy, we do not rest in it. That's what the Jews were doing. In other words, they were at complete rest. They were not actually doing anything in the world as far as promoting the kingdom of Christ. Nothing of the kingdom of God. Not one thing. But they were doing everything they possibly could to hinder the promotion of the gospel and the kingdom of the Lord Jesus Christ. They were doing everything to turn that around and turn it back in the face of those who were laboring. And so we're in the same situation. We ought to be thankful for that we have peace and joy, but we don't rest in that. We just continue to labor and do what we're supposed to do and make our witness clear and plain to this old lost world out here. If it gets us in trouble, it just gets us in trouble. But we do that. That's what we're here for. That's what Paul was doing. That was his business. We have business in this world, and we've got to maintain that business and continue it until God brings this thing to a close. We have first of all here, number one, this grateful acknowledgement of personal worth. Though this is a lie, it's in place, in fact, if we have opportunity to acknowledge this to one that deserves it. And there have been down through the ages those that deserve acknowledgement. You know, if this isn't in order, of course, and it is true and sincere, that's what I'm trying to say, we ought to do it. We ought to acknowledge this. And, we find in the study of the kings of Israel, if you study the first, second Kings, first, second Chronicles, that's the history of the kings. You'll find that there were good kings and there were bad kings. It's up and down, in and out, over and over. Here's a good reign, here's a bad reign. Here's a man that comes in and he's seeking the glory of God and the good of the people. And here's a fellow that comes in, he's seeking only that pads his own pad, his own objectives, his own ideology. He's a bad king. For example, we have King David. Oh, King David. What a king King David was. A man after God's own heart, after God's own will. Sought to do that glorified God. Bring the people to worship the one and true God. That was David's whole objective in the entire tenure of his reign. There was Jehoshaphat. Jehoshaphat was another good king. He made some mistakes, and so did David. But over and all, they were good kings, and they sought the glory of God, and they sought the good of the people. Now, that's a good king. That's a good leader, isn't it? That's a good potentate, one that presides over a nation. And we find a study of the kings of England. The same situation. We have good kings and good queens and bad kings and bad queens right down through the history of the study of the kings and queens of England. I was thinking about this. In light of David and Jehoshaphat, here comes Rehoboam, the son of Solomon, who went absolutely backwards, totally opposite to what his father had done as he reigned for 40 years. And made a mess out of everything that his father left for him to rule over. And then you had old Ahab. My soul, what a wicked, wicked king Ahab was. And then you had Manasseh. He's a wicked king. Thank God we have the whole story of Manasseh. And God got a hold of his heart and converted him toward the end. He didn't die unsaved. Thank the Lord for that. God can do what he wants to, what he pleases, and with whom he pleases. But here we have it. And I was thinking about the kings and queens of England. And it's revealed to us alike, just like the study of the kings of Israel. Queen Victoria, she's one of my favorites of all the queens of England. For example, she was gifted with, said with many gracious characteristics, many woman charities. Queen Victoria. Matter of fact, says she was no stranger to the homes of the poor. She would go into a poor home If there were a need there, she would see to that need. She was compassionate toward the people. That's something to have, isn't it, in a leader, in someone in power, as Queen Victoria was. She was quick to sympathize with common sorrow. She was. She sternly repressed vices in the kingdom. That is, things that were going on wrong in high places. She faced those things down. And she suppressed them. And repressed them and would not allow them. And she was not ignorant of... Hey, this is a blessed thing about Queen Victoria. She was not ignorant of our Holy Comforter, the Lord God Almighty, our Holy Blessed Comforter, the Spirit of the Lord. And nor was she disobedient to the King of Kings. I believe Victoria was a Christian. I really do. I believe she loved the Lord and served to honor God. Man, wouldn't that be nice if we had that kind of leadership today? Just seeking to honor and glorify God. Well, that's what God raises up leaders for. They're to rule in the fear of the Lord. Matter of fact, David said this. He said, the God of Israel said this. The Rock of Israel spake to me. He that ruleth over men must be just. That was God's words to David. He that ruleth over men must be just. Ruling in the fear of God. Oh my, wouldn't that be wonderful? We had those that ruled in the fear of God. Country's in a mess, isn't it? It's in an absolute mess. And it's because it's missed this right here. Yeah, it's a judgment of God, maybe. Because the people, oh, so many times the people bring it down upon their own heads. Because they fail to acknowledge what God intends for a people to acknowledge. And that's His glory. Well, look at it again. Verse 1 and 2. And after 5 days, Ananias. After 5 days. Now, some copies, the Alexandrian text reads like this. And after some days, leaving it undetermined on how many. It was relatively quick. Matthew Henry has good notes on this thing. Very quick. I mean, Paul was in Jerusalem about 7 days. He was there going through the ceremony of purification for 7 days. We know that. He was there for 12. And so you only have 5 left. And then this great stir takes place, and Paul is taken by the Jews, and Claudius Lysias rescues him, and he's kept there in Claudius' house for probably at least a couple of days, through the night anyway. And then Claudius orders some men, some soldiers, to take him to Caesarea. And these Jews didn't let any grass grow under their feet. They followed the procession down to Caesarea before Felix, the governor, hoping that they could bring a judgment against Paul and get rid of him once and for all. So it was very quick here when this thing took place. And as I said in the text here, in the original text here, you don't have a number of days; it's indeterminate. And so we have some speculation here. I guess we could be somewhat free to do. But they were not summoned. These Jews were really not summoned to come. They came on their own. Matter of fact, once they got wind that what Claudius Lysias had done and that Paul was on his way to Caesarea, they just got on their high horse and there they went, following the procession down there. I think it's probably somewhat of an apprehension by these Jews on what might be done by Felix the governor. Because what they did was mob action. It was just a mob of thugs that rose up and were going to destroy this man Paul, the apostle. So knowing that, and I believe they probably knew this, they knew that a certain letter had been written by Lysias and sent by one of his men as they took Paul down to Caesarea to Felix. I believe they got wind of that pretty quick. And they wondered what was in that letter and what might be a problem to them in that letter. And so they let, like I say, they let no grass grow on their feet. They got right, they hightailed it right down to Caesarea. And following those, that procession of soldiers taking Paul down there, they were no doubt apprehensive and somewhat edgy and made haste to vindicate themselves. That's the whole objective here. To clear themselves and bring further judgment upon an innocent man. You see how wicked this law system was. How they would turn this thing, men, if they had the power and had the money. And I just imagine they paid Tertullus, he was one of the best in the land, they paid Tertullus a big sum of money to represent them. I imagine a man can do that, can't he? You know, we've seen that happen in our lifetime. Certain ones, you know, we won't call names, but certain ones, you know, we know, the world knows they're guilty. Just, I mean, it's obvious. Everybody knows they're guilty. And yet you take a slick lawyer to work the court and get this thing, get a murderer, a killer off. Full spine. So Tertullus by name appears to be a Roman. Someone suggested this. As a matter of fact, and because he might know the Roman or Greek language or both, which the Jews did not so well understand. And I think he was very well acquainted with all the forms and the law of the Roman courts. So they needed somebody beside themselves. Oh, the high priest, Ananias, he went down. But he didn't go down there to do any prosecution, to argue the case. No, they took the orator, Tertullus. So I believe he was employed 100% by the Jews and probably paid very well to try to get this thing across to Felix. So it says Ananias, the high priest, descended with the elders. Matthew Henry said this. He said that he should thus disparage himself. Now think about this. And forget, and yet Tertullus here in the name of the high priest and elders, and probably by particular directions from them and according to the instructions of his breviate, compliments him. And extolled him to the sky, the dignity of his place. And shall the high priest, this is Henry's question here. He said, shall the high priest turn informer and leave all his business in the temple at Jerusalem? I mean, he had no business in Caesarea. His business was in Jerusalem, not presiding over legal matters, but over religious matters. Wasn't that his business? He was high. Why go to Caesarea? He had one objective. We've got to stamp this thing out. This is our opportunity. Let's stop it now. And it goes no further. So here he goes. And so he goes to be called, he thinks maybe, as a witness against Paul, which he never was, in Herod's judgment hall. And justly, did God make the priests contemptible and base when they made themselves so atrocious as old Ananias did? God condemns this over in the book of Malachi, Malachi chapter 2, I believe it is. But haters of the gospel have no dignity whatsoever, have no dignity, and stop to no ends in their evil attempts to overthrow the movement of the gospel. It's always been. Started out that way. Read down through the corridors of history. Read the various times in which the church suffered and suffered terribly so. And we'll find it so. It all went back to distorted law, perverted court presiders, those who set themselves up as judges over the people of God. The Reformation, you see it over and over there. Even prior to the Reformation, when those Anabaptists had to seek refuge in the mountains and the dens and the caves and the forests and places where they might be hid. They were after their hide, constantly after their hide. Self-made lawyers, self-made judges, self-made prosecutors, trying to stamp out the movement of the gospel. Never have been successful, though, have they? Never have. And there's a work today going on. I'll guarantee you our hair would be curled if we knew what was going on behind the scenes in the darkness, the conspiracies. We know this, according to Psalm 2. There's an attempt, and always has been an attempt, to cast the cords of God's people. That's the restraints of God's people from them, to break their bands. Those things that hinder the anti-Christian movement. And if they could, they would. Well, the opening of the indictment against him. You'll notice here that Tertullus was, who was of counsel for the prosecutors, and the aggravating of the charge, and with abundance of compliments to the judge and malice to the prisoner. Again, look at verse 2. He says, "And when Paul was called, Tertullus began to accuse him, saying, seeing that by thee," talking now to Felix, "we enjoy great quietness, that very worthy deeds are done unto this nation by thy providence, we accept it always, and in all places, most noble Felix, with all thankfulness. Notwithstanding, nevertheless, now, that I be not further tiring or tedious or wearing upon your patience, unto thee," he says, I pray thee that you would hear us of thy clemency of just a few words. For we have found this man, Paul, a pest, a pestilent fellow, and a mover of sedition among all the Jews throughout the world, and a ringleader of the sect of the Nazarenes, who hath also gone about to profane the temple. And we took and would have judged according to our law. But the chief captain, Lysias, came upon us and with a great violence took him away out of our hands, commanding his accusers to come unto thee. And that's not so. That's not so. Now, Lysias sent Paul with a letter to Felix and told Felix what had gone on. And these people that are there now that were not summoned at all, they went on their own. You read it carefully. They went on their own. So this is another lie that he's drummed up. Of whom thyself mayest take knowledge of all these things whereof we accuse him. And then, of course, the Jews nodded their head in assent, in agreement. So here's Tertullus making the case with his flattering words to the governor. And someone said, one of the worst of men is here applauded by one of the best of benefactors only because he was the judge. Nobody had any use for Felix, not even Tertullus. And definitely not the Jews. Felix, is said by the historian, is represented by the historian as of his own nation, as well as by Josephus, the Jewish historian, Josephus, as a very bad man. Very bad. Who, depending upon his interest in the court, allowed himself in all manner of wickedness, was a great oppressor. Very cruel and very covetous, patronizing and protecting even assassins that had been hired by the Romans to annihilate certain ones that was interfering with the Roman movement. So that's the kind of man we're talking about here. And yet, to engage him to gratify their malice against Paul, and to return them and to return them that kindness for their kindness, and overlooking all this, they magnify old Tertullus as the greatest blessing to their church, their movement, their assemblies, and to their nation that ever came among them. Oh, how men can lie. How men can turn a matter all the way around to make it suit their ends. Right. We still face with it. Folks, are you listening to me? Have men changed one iota when it comes to the gospel today? Don't we still fight it tooth and nail to try to promote the kingdom, promote the gospel, do what we can to get the word out there to poor lost sinners? Don't we do that? And are we not opposed in every way? I mean, men strive to tear down, not build up. This little church is going through such turmoil, such trial. I tell you what, were it not for the grace of God, I'd probably thrown in a towel and gone long ago. But no, can't do it. Can't do it. Can't do it. Can't do it. I guess I'm eating my own words. So many times I said, I'm going to preach the gospel. I'm going to preach the truth. Gary, I've said this. If I had to preach it to the trees, to the woods, and shake hands with the trees, I got nobody else to preach it to. I'm going to preach the gospel. I'm going to be faithful as God gives me grace to the gospel that He's called me to preach. But it's a tough battle. It's a fight all the way to the end. Always has been. I don't expect it to get any easier. I really don't. I really don't. No, things have not changed. Why? Because men never change. Men are always the same. We're nothing but men. Men. I'm a man preaching to men. That's all I am. And were it not for the grace of God, were it not for the grace of God, could not stand up, could not do it. After a while, you'd crumble under. So many have. So may God help us, and bless us, and continue to be with us. We're going to pray.